I'm Author Function.
I'm Galvin.
And this is the Secret Boss Podcast, where we talk about the best auteurs in gaming, whether they deserve that title or not. Today, we are talking about Christine Love, whose name is appropriate because she talks about a lot of games about love and romance, which is the clearest case of nominative determinism I've ever seen. Because apparently that's her real name.
I still can't believe that, to be honest. Feels like a character she would make up for one of her visual novels. Yeah, this person, she writes visual novels about love. Your name? Christine Love. Perfect.
It's very much an Ace Attorney character, to be honest. Yeah, but Christine Love doesn't only just do romance. She's also a person that does a lot of visual novels about technology and characters and the way that the intersect between both love and romance, but in a tech context. And she mainly considers herself a writer. I've seen like on her blogs and on her Wikipedia page that she primarily focuses on her writing instead of being a game developer. And she mostly thinks of her games as a place to showcase her writing instead of like being a game developer, which I think is very interesting for one of these game auteurs.
I think so too, especially considering that her visual novels are kind of like based on messing with the format, and especially aren't meant to be read in like straightforward prose. They're kind of like shaped around their containers. She does different things of all sorts of them.
So Christine Love writes a lot of visual novels, and a lot of people think of visual novels as pretty basic character setups. You have a character sprite in the middle, you have dialogue on the bottom, and you just sort of click through it. But a lot of Christine Love's visual novels try to do something interesting. You have these big interface around, or you have some special dialogue options that are kind of unconventional for the format. And this is something that is also happening in a lot of other visual novels, but for the common Western idea about what a visual novel is, this is very atypical for a Western developer to do.
That's right. Unlike other visual novels, this one's about the characters.
Actually, these visual novels are actually about the mechs. There aren't any mechs in these games, but...
Hypothetical
mechs. There could be mechs here. Let's start with Digital, A Love Story. Christine Love had been writing visual novels for several years, but she really came into her own and became popular through her game Digital, A Love Story. This was a visual novel NaNoWriMo event. I completely forgot what it's called.
NaNoWriMo, yeah. Because there's NaNoWriMo, which is for novels, but then there's NaNoWriMo, which is a visual novel version.
Right, so she'd been participating in a lot of write a visual novel in a month sort of things. But for whatever reason, her old visual novels had only a few dozen people playing them, but this one had thousands. It was put into a bunch of articles and publications, and it's how I found out about Christine Love, because she's one of the very first video game auteurs I had heard of, and I just saw her on the Gamma Sutra website. Big article about her and Digital Love Story and some of her other games, and it really made me understand like what a game developer was, and that website is now called Game Developer instead of Gamma Sutra, which I find very sad.
They're trying to remove sex from video games. They're sex negative now. We have to bring it back.
It's terrible. Yeah.
What was the sell for Digital Love Story back then? Because I wasn't there when I heard about it. I only heard about Christine Love because you introduced her to me. And this was like years later.
I came into it because I was a visual novel lover. I'd already played Ace Attorney, Zero Escape, and the Infinity series. And I was like, okay, I've played all the big English translated sci-fi visual novels. But what else is out there? And then that's how I found Christine Love. And it was also probably one of the first Western visual novels I played. Maybe I played Katawa Shoujo first. But it was like, oh, wow, there are people who I could find online and talk to if I wanted to, who are making these sci-fi visual novels that are really interesting and fun. It's like, oh, that kind of kept her in my mind as a person instead of like the vague concept of a person that I had with other video games. Like, oh, somebody made this, but they're not real to me. Whereas Christine Love was very much real to me. I saw her on the internet. I saw her doing interviews, and I was learning about the people who were making these games. And that was really cool for me.
This is kind of a very personal game, as far as I can tell, for her. It takes place on this BBS server, which is apparently what computers were like in the Stone Ages. You have to connect to like different servers and different forums and things like that. And you basically play this unnamed character who's just like clicking around on this server, and you fall in love with this anonymous girl who things go and spiral on from there. But in general, it's about that kind of forum culture back then when it came to BBSs and stuff like that. And you can tell this is something that Christine Love grew up with, and this is her trying to recreate that experience with you.
It's a very earnest and specific game that was really novel and interesting during the first wave of indie games. The interesting thing about this game is that you can't actually like type or really interact with these people on your own, but you're kind of role-playing a character who is pressing the reply button, and then you automatically reply with something you don't know. It's just an empty space. You have to assume like, okay, I'm hearing one part of this phone call, and that part of the phone call we're hearing is from the other characters.
Here, I think already from the beginning, she's using genre and high concept stories as a background to what she really wants to talk about, which is personal stuff. Speaking of personal stuff, let me tell you my personal feelings about this game. I don't really care about it. Sorry to bury the lead there, but yes.
I find that really strange for me because, or maybe not strange because I know your taste, but Digital Love Story feels the most kind of populist blockbuster of all of her games.
Yeah,
it feels just like a 92-hour minute movie where it has a very clear structure, stakes, you have a cool climax, and then a nice resolution. And it feels like a really fast and clear experience that I really don't see with a lot of video games that are usually much shorter or much longer. It has a lot of things to say, but it is understandable and it's something that I can pretty easily recommend to anyone, which is why I assume that it spread so easily through the games media at the time, because it is both novel, but also familiar enough and recognizable enough to be played by anyone and recommend to anyone.
To me, I like it. I would recommend it to other people. It's just that compared to other games, it's kind of like finding out somebody made like a super cool MCU movie, and then you also find out they made the atomic bomb, which killed a billion people in real life.
I'm pretty sure that's what Oppenheimer was about.
Didn't that guy direct Iron Man 2, I think?
Yeah. You had that other guy who was in the courtroom who was Iron Man. I'm pretty sure that's how that worked.
Before the trial, they were like, let's shoot this movie real quick. And they just ducked out.
The really interesting thing about Digital for me is that is the latest that game could exist in 2010. Because right after that, we get much more cynical about the internet and social media, whereas Digital is very earnest. It's like, oh man, you can see these small communities really rising up against a really big, scary threat by just sort of communicating honestly with each other. Whereas technology is slowly seen more cynically throughout every single game she makes. And by the time we get like 10 years later, she's like, oh man, fuck social media. Fuck all this technology. We gotta get rid of this shit. It is very funny to me to sort of see that evolution within her work.
And yeah, it's this cynicism that I think kind of leads us into at least what I think is the main point of this episode, because I feel like we haven't really explained what I at least find interesting about Christine Love, which is that she is, I guess to put it in one word, controversial. Christine Love, over the next few years after she got popular, took, let's just say, more and more creative risks with her writing. She writes a lot more about kink and sex positive things, which is great, but also does it in very strange, very, let's say, alternative. See, this is where I'm like, I'm starting to talk like an asshole. I'm like, I can't do this. Do you want to introduce it? I'm sorry.
I can introduce this concept in a more calm way.
Thank you.
Yeah, so Christine Love has described herself as a messy queer writer, which is something I very strongly agree with.
You could say I agree with one word more than the other one. You know, I walked in thinking the queer part would be the capitalized one, because that's cool, right? I love that. And I still love that. It's just, after playing all of her games, I think another word in that three-word sentence is highlighted a lot more.
Okay. So a lot of the games she writes, they are very queer games. They have a lot of queer characters, which is really atypical for the early 2010s. She was one of the very few queer video game developers during that time. And she was also someone who was interested in writing a lot of really messy fiction with some dark themes and context and a lot of dark characters. Some characters that she writes are really messed up characters, and it kind of leaves you like dealing with, okay, what am I supposed to do with these terrible people, who some of which are queer and interesting, but are still bad people in a lot of different ways. And some of these portrayals are more sympathetic than others, and that can be very complicated. Walking that line of being empathetic to really difficult experiences while also not sort of glorifying a lot of it is a very, very thin line. And sometimes that line gets a little difficult for a lot of these games.
Yes. As I played more and more of these games, I kept thinking of one term more and more in my head, which is post-irony. Post-irony is basically when the genuine feelings of an author get sometimes muddled or difficult to tell apart from what they mean to be ironic. So it's kind of hard to tell what an offer is saying or what an offer's stance is on, let alone whether they want you to have a specific stance on anything. And Christine's Love's games are very interesting to me because, well, it's hard to describe her writing style, but I would say it's kind of like simultaneously a blend of really unsubtle dialogue and prose with simultaneously very contradictory, hard to parse apart, and controversial scenarios. Look, I think we're talking in abstracts too much here. Do you want to talk about a specific example of her controversial writing?
Yeah, let's just talk about her follow-up to Digital, A Love Story. Don't take it personally, babe. It just ain't your story, which is a fantastic title. This game is really interesting because it is both a cute, queer high school romance and at the same time, fucked up Lolita 1984 scenario. The plot of Don't Take It Personally, Babe, It Just Ain't Your Story is that you are playing a character named John Rook and you are a teacher at a new school, and they have their own personal social media server where you are able to look at what the students are doing, and they won't know that you're looking, but you can watch all their conversations, all their private information that is being sent out between them.
I just want to mention here, because he didn't do it yet, the teacher is 38 years old. Just casually putting it out there. It's not going to be like super relevant later. I'm just mentioning it for now.
Yeah, not important. So you're able to watch these kids as they sort of have their own conflicts with each other. There are romances, there are breakups, there are all kinds of things going on between them. And every time something happens, you get a little notification on your user interface. It's like, oh, I can click here on the top right corner of my visual novel and see what these kids are really talking about each other with. Some of it is like really angry arguments, lots of gossip, and also a lot of it is like sexual and like, oh, you really shouldn't be reading this stuff as a adult teacher, what these kids are doing. This is a game that is very clearly meant to be satirical. It is trying to make sure that you know that it is bad that you are invading these kids' privacy, but it is also handled in a way where it can be very easy to read this in a very different way, because another big element of this game is, like I said, is a Lolita scenario, is that you as the teacher can have a romance with one of these kids, and that can be very difficult to read, even if it's handled very well, and I can't recommend this game for anyone because of that element. Yeah, so you're basically looking at these kids' private messages between each other, and that prompts the teacher to have the option to go, like, maybe I can romance one of these kids. One of these kids has a crush on me. And you can follow that through to its conclusion. There are lots of CG animations where yes. You can see the way that this romance is progressing, where there's a kissing CG and there's one, the two characters cuddling in bed. If you go through that storyline and you keep on going, at the end of the game, it just ends up working out. It's very abrupt, happy ending between them. It really brings a really bittersweet tone to it, where it's like, oh man, everyone is pretty okay with this fucked up scenario happening, and that's terrible. But on the other hand, if you're not really on the anti-pedophilia side, it's not going to be arguing against you very much, because this is something that a lot of other visual novels do, where there's a happy ending between an adult and a child, and it's not really confronted at all.
The most fucked up part to me is that the pedophilia aspect is relegated to one branch, which you can skip entirely if you want, because the main game is actually about you kind of helping out these students in mostly positive ways. There are like gay relationships with people who are unsure of each other, people who have internalized homophobia, and you can help them come out to each other and genuinely make their lives better and like talk to them as if you were a good teacher. But also, there is this route, which isn't differentiated against with the other ones where you help students, where you can make out with this 15-year-old girl. And it's just like, it's refusal to tell you that this is a different route from the other one. The fact that you can just choose this, and this would just kind of be like weaved in and out of the other storylines. That's the stuff that really freaks me out. And to talk about the ending. At the end, if you choose the pedophilia route, you get away with it scot-free. The girl still likes you. You can still go out of her at the end. But in addition to that, I'm just going to spoil the whole game here. I don't think this is a game that really depends on spoilers. I got the game spoiled before I went into the game. It still felt like getting hit by a truck. The big plot twist at the end of the game is that they actually see you. They've known the entire time that you've been watching them, and they don't care because they grew up in a world without privacy. And that's just it. So you don't get arrested for privacy charges, and you don't get arrested for looking into things. You don't get arrested for affecting these children through your actions, even knowing their secrets, in quotes. And also, you don't get thrown in jail for romancing the 15-year-old girl. This to me is like what really hit me about Christine Love's work. I don't want to narrow down one individual thing about her work because she does so many things that are just like casually disturbing to me. But it's just like the refusal to acknowledge that there's even something wrong in the first place. She'll throw out a problem and it's just like something you deal with. Everyone else is smiling. They're pretending like it's normal. And you're just sitting there like, isn't somebody going to address this? But of course, nobody does. There's this great moment at the end of the game where when the teacher gets away scot-free, casually mentions something like Elysium. And then in the comments, one of the students is like, what's Elysium? And then the other students are like, oh yeah, Elysium is just kind of like this purgatory where souls wander forever after they die. It's like this kind of hell where there's no like catharsis or anything. You just kind of wander forever. And that's the last message in the game.
This kind of effect becomes a running theme in the rest of Christine Love's work, where sort of the technology and the material circumstances of the world, the economics, the broader tech sphere is sort of all coming together to really create a lot of terrible scenarios. But it ends up being something that everyone kind of slowly begins to accept. It's sort of the slow erosion of social norms just going away as technology sort of mediates a way of accepting these things.
And I think the thing about this that got her thrown into so much fire with the gaming community is that she crosses this kind of acknowledgement of worldly disasters and real political issues with the anime aesthetic, because all of her games are anime aesthetic visual novels, most of them. The way I was reading it, a lot of it was kind of a critique of anime culture in a way that somebody might critique it getting into it for the first time. Like the first time you watch a specific anime and there's like some weird pedophile character that's not dealt with, or how they talk about incest so casually in other situations, and how people are like, you just kind of have to put up with the anime bullshit sometimes for specific types of anime. And I think Christine Love's work is a lot of reckoning with these kind of anime aesthetics in a way that people can accuse of xenophobic also. Another thing about it is that she kind of takes on Asian cultures with this aracial kind of lens to it.
Almost entirely white characters.
Yeah, you could say so. White characters rendered in anime aesthetic, constantly referencing nerd culture and anime culture, which to be clear, she is a part of. She grew up in those kind of tech circles and with anime and all that kind of stuff. But the point is, she grew up with it as a woman, a queer woman, who maybe this work wasn't necessarily made for as the target demographic. And a lot of that is just like, how do you deal with being in this culture and loving it and also knowing that it's kind of antagonized towards people like you?
Yeah, she's sort of in this negotiated position where she does very much love anime and visual novels and dating sims, but she's also in a position where you enjoy those things and also think they have a lot of really terrible elements, which is something I very much relate to as someone who's watched anime for a very long time and who also likes dating sims. The thing about Christine Love's games is that a lot of these games are pretty critical of the romance visual novel dating sim genre, but it's criticisms from a place of understanding them, because a lot of parody dating sims are just awful. They have no idea what they're talking about. Don't Take It Personally, Babe is probably one of the very first parody dating sims, I would say, that came out, and it actually understands the genre in a way that is not sort of surface level critical.
And another thing about like Christine Love stuff is that she also identifies, I think, with edgelord 4chan culture in a way that she genuinely likes using it.
I think that's true of her early work. I think that there's a very clear difference between her post and pre Gamergate games in that regard. That is something to notice about her earlier work, that it is pretty deep into the edgy parts of the internet. And it is important to keep that in mind. I would still say that her work is still very queer and very feminist, but there are queer feminist people that are still kind of in that culture and are influenced in maybe more ways than they might realize. I do think that this is something that improves in her later work, but it is also something to keep in mind.
Let's talk about Analog.
So Analog was kind of her big commercial release. It was her first commercial release. Selling it on Steam for her was kind of a big deal because it was a lot harder to put games on Steam back then.
By the way, I just want to mention, this is insane. I feel like we underemphasized the part about the NaNiRimo competitions. You only have a month to make these visual novels. And she made Digital Love Story, Don't Take It Personally, Babe, and Analog in like a month, which is insane once you see them. Their UI presentations are just leagues above even visual novels that are being made today. And their character design and the music, it's like fully presented games. And she was just pumping these out very, very quickly. There was this interview where she talks about Analog being made while she was struggling with student debt in college, and she had at some point had to choose between submitting essays for her college or finishing the game. And she chose to finish the game. Insane.
I did not realize that Analog was made in a month. I can't believe that. I assumed that she was working longer on it because it was a commercial game. But man, that's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
Anyway, Analog Hate Story. This is probably one of her more acclaimed games. It was probably one of the most popular Western visual novels when it came out because there weren't very many of them. This is another kind of a digital interface game, like Digital Love Story. Your character is investigating this spaceship in the far future and trying to really understand what's going on there, what happened to it. And the main character does this by interacting with Yone, an AI who is sort of like guiding you through all these historical archives about the ship and sort of teaching you about what happened. It is very much a game about its interface and the way that you are interacting with the archive and what you have access to, what you don't have access to, what you are able to glean from having specific points of data about the history, and what other people within the ship were able to access during that time.
And the real big curveball the game throws you is that you find out after exploring the logs on the ship, it was a Korean ship that has reverted back to the historical time of the
Joseon Dynasty.
I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. It was very misogynistic and patriarchal. So it becomes somehow from this futuristic sci-fi story where you talk with this AI, also a historical exploration of this dynasty that actually happened in Korea.
You learn about like all the really terrible sexist customs that are happening here that are based on stuff that happened in real life, but it has its own futurist flair to it. And I think that sort of dissonance between a futuristic setting with a lot of regressive ideas is really powerful, especially as social media has continued to encourage a lot of misogyny, despite having a tech futurist promise of the world getting better, which is an interesting aspect to it.
And then at the end of the game, it turns into a dating sim anyways. Another dating sim critique. Oh my god. I guess I don't think this is spoilers. It's not really that much of a twist or anything. It's just something that happens. At the end of the game, you get to romance this AI who has been shot down by patriarchal norms for years, has experienced all sorts of horrific trauma. And then at the end, you get to date her because you're the first person she's ever met who's not misogynistic.
The really cool thing about this is that Hyun-ae canonically does not know anything about your character. All you can interact with are yes and no questions that she's setting up, and it's very strange and disturbing act to like answer her yes or no questions because they don't really give a lot of information to her. It's like I'm from Earth. You can say that, but it's like, am I from Earth? Am I? Because this happens like halfway through the game when you're creating a character in most video games. That's at the very start where like, okay, you are a person and you're going to describe what person you are, and then you're going to come into the world undisturbed. Whereas in Analog: A Hate Story, you learn all about this world and then you get to decide who you are and who you are in relation to the entire thing. And it's very strange to have to figure that out halfway through the game. And Hyun-ae, she doesn't know anything about you, but she is willing to be in a relationship with you, which can be read in a lot of really interesting ways, I think. Because on the one hand, this could be a critique of romance visual novels, where no matter what you do, you can basically romance someone without really having to put any effort into the relationship. But like, on the other hand, there's this part where it's like, okay, so she grew up in this misogynistic culture and she has a lot of this baggage with her. Is she allowed to have a healthy relationship with someone at this point in time? Or is it just, you cannot do that? And I thought that was really fascinating to think about as I was choosing whether to accept or reject this romance option.
Well, you don't even know if it's healthy. I mean, God knows what your character could do to her the second the credits roll. It could be anything because, again, you only responded through yes or no questions. You barely even know your own character. The other more fucked up part about it is, again, this is where the conflict between wanting to go with one side or the other that I think even Christine Love is going through is, at least I feel like she genuinely wants Hyun-ae to be happy. And one way she thinks for Hyun-ae to be happy was, I'll just make the character date her. That way she'll be happy, you know? At least she'll be happier than she was before. And that's like, I don't know, even that like compromise, fucked up to me.
Another thing that you can do is dress Hyun-ae up in a lot of different costumes.
Yeah.
Some of these are pretty tame, but I think there's like a sexy nurse costume. I can't remember for sure, but I think there are like some like more attractive costumes for her to wear. And you're doing this like in between navigating historical logs about all the horrible sexist abuse that she's suffered. And it's like, her character is like happy about this. It's not like you're forcing it upon her, but it is another weird scenario where it's like, I am both recognizing a lot of terrible parts about this culture, and I'm also like, should I be indulging with this? Is it okay for me to be doing this with her? I think that's another like really interesting critique that the game has, because that is also another thing that you could really relate to the real world. Like, if you're doing a lot of different submissive sexualized kink scenarios, what are the ethics of doing that in a like hetero patriarchal society where that can have a lot of harmful effects, but it can also be something that someone is genuinely consenting to and enjoys on their own personal level. It's just a really interesting conflict to put in this game. Like, again, with the anime negotiated position that she has, it's like, man, I like a lot of this, but also I'm recognizing that there's a lot of harmful stuff in here and I don't know what to do with that. And it's sort of an expression of that within the video game, which is, again, I think her work is fascinating in that direction.
And this is also completely ignoring the entirely separate thread where you discover another AI girl and you can kind of choose between the two of them, like you can choose who you're dating. And when you pick one option, the other option just never turns on again. You just turn off the AI forever. And they're not killed or anything. They're just kind of in a persistent state of alive and dead for the rest of eternity because you leave the ship after that.
The interesting thing about this other AI who is another woman, she's going like, okay, you've heard a lot of bad stuff, but it really wasn't that bad, okay? This place wasn't that sexist. We all had good fun. We were all okay with this. It wasn't a big deal. And that other AI, Hune, she's crazy. She's fucked up. Don't listen to her. Everything was fine on this ship and she screwed it all up. It is like a big piece of whiplash that is also like, have I accepted too much of this? Can I go too far with enjoying myself within this sexist society? There's just so much to talk about in that.
And the only ending in the game where you actually get the two AI to meet and actually communicate with each other and develop as characters is a joke ending that can't happen literally in the story because you don't have the right information at the right time. And also, to top it all off, it becomes a harem ending. So even in this joke ending, these women, they don't get to stand on their own. They're both dating you now.
Yeah, it's really something. I think that this is probably her deepest text, I personally think, because there is so much that you can look into within this game. I don't know if it's her best, but it is something that you can analyze endlessly because it's just so interesting.
And like simultaneously, it is also pretty accessible. Not super disturbing enough on the forefront that it becomes alienating for some people. The most fucked up parts are the ones that aren't acknowledged, which is a good part about some of her games. But there are other games which are, let's just say, a lot more direct with how they confront the player.
After Analog: A Hate Story and its success on Steam, she did a sequel that was originally supposed to be DLC called Hate Plus, which is an obvious parody at the time, but is less obvious now, of the popular dating sim Love Plus, which was famous during that time for being the dating sim, but I don't think people really talk about it anymore.
All I remember is the guy who like tried to date that one character from the DS game and married her.
Exactly. That's why Love Plus was so famous, because some guy tried to marry one of the characters. And oh yeah, the thing about Love Plus that made it so interesting and special was the way it interacted with the real world, because you had to interact with these characters in real time using the Nintendo DS time function. You had to like check up on these girls and see what they're doing at different times. And the thing about Hate Plus is that it also does this. You also have to interact with the game at specific times. Every time you play through the game, at some point it'll be like, hey, you're done for this, go to sleep, and then you can't play the game for another 24 hours or so. You have to stop playing at that point. You really have to engage with this game on its own terms, which is something I don't really see very often, but it's wild to look at when I first played it.
I did not know that. I didn't play that far to get there. They really Robert Yanged you. Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah. So Hate Plus is another game about going through archives, but it's about the conditions that happened before the entire ship turned into a sexist dystopia. And it's not doing a lot that is on a game design level that is a whole lot different from Analog: A Hate Story. But I think the plot in this one is much more interesting because you're sort of seeing the broader social implications of what is happening, going through all these different characters and seeing how they're changing over years and years. And you're also talking about the politics of this game. Like, a big part of this game is that it wasn't any one big thing that happened that created this whole sexist dystopia. It was a whole lot of little things. And one of the most important things in this ship's history is a child tax credit. It wasn't like some big sexist law or anything. It was just like, hey, if you have a kid, then you'll get some more money and you'll get to live better. And this ends up having massive implications for the story because it starts to exclude a lot of queer people and it starts to enforce a lot of patriarchal norms where a lot of men have more control over the marriages and the finances. It all slowly builds up into just this really big climax of everything changing within the game. It is so fascinating the way that she builds up the sort of material conditions and how everything just kind of changes one by one without any one massive change doing everything. I know Galvin didn't play this game, so I'm just going to say that this is the best one. This is the best game she wrote, and Galvin didn't experience it, so can never truly critique Christine Love as an artist.
God damn it. Just when I thought I was out.
Terrible.
They pull me back in.
Anyway, let's move on to her next game, Lady Killer in a Bind. Do you want to explain this one?
Yeah, I can. I don't know.
Seems like you don't want to.
No. Okay. Let me explain something to the audience. I feel like at this point in the episode, they might be wondering, like, what's going on? There seems to be a different vibe happening this episode. Behind the scenes, let's just say Offer has been a Christine Love fan for a while and has been kind of like, you know, recommending it to me. And I've been playing some of her games and I'm like, okay, I played analog, I played digital. You know, I kind of get it, kind of don't get it. And then playing the rest of her games for the recommendation for this episode, I was suddenly overcome with a wave of, I guess, what I could call, like, hysterical upset, which, to be clear, is a very good thing. Christine Love is a transgressive artist, and she transgressed me. She transgressed the fuck out of me. She 100%, just 100-hit combo transgressed me. There have literally been nights where I have been trying to sleep, and I've been thinking about some of her video games. And this was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back, as if it wasn't broken before already. But this was the one that was like, what the fuck is she doing? Again, I want you to remember post-irony here, okay? That mix of somehow subtle and unsubtle writing, where you don't know what parts she wants to make obvious and what parts she doesn't want to make obvious. Anyways, Lady Killer in a Bind is a game where you play as a cis woman who is pretending to be her brother on a high school cruise filled with extremely rich, elite high schoolers who are all really horny and want to have sex with each other, but also there is now a kind of like killing game taking place over the intercoms, but it's not a killing game. It's a game where everyone votes for each other, and whoever gets the most points gets like $5 million or something like that. And what that means is that you, who is now playing your twin brother, who's not a very nice person, has to socially manipulate all of your high school friends who aren't really your friends, who also want to have sex with you, into voting for you so you get the $5 million. But also, it's not about any of that, because in reality, this is a porn game and it's about having sex with people. Hope that makes sense. Where do you even start with this game? Do you even know why I like this game that much?
I don't know. The way you've been describing it makes me think you don't like it very much, but
I do.
Apparently you do love it. It's your favorite Christine Love game.
This is like miles ahead my favorite Christine Love game, because to me, that kind of teetering on the edge of sincerity and irony and how it makes me really uncomfortable is the best part about her work. And she just kind of like stomps down on that edge the entire game here. Even barring the controversy surrounding this game, which we'll mention later, just the very premise of this game is kind of fraught with peril. In the interviews for this game, initially describing it while it was in development, Christine Love said she wanted to make a game about how dating sims kind of made you a sociopath, which you are manipulating girls who you're presumably sexually attracted to by giving them specific commands to make them like images of you that will then coax them into being more attracted to you, despite the fact that you're a 3D person interacting through a 2D interface. Here, it's kind of extrapolated to quote-unquote real people. It's kind of like half and half. They're half porn characters in that they exist in this kind of porn universe where sex is a lot more accepted. The moral boundaries are a lot more muddled. Like how you watch a lot of porn and it's like bordering on bizarre consensual rights, or like how large parts of America like incest porn for some reason, even though I'm guessing large parts of them are not incestuous. And it's about like that border between fiction and reality is kind of muddled. And on the other hand, they're actual people. You're supposed to treat them like people with real feelings. So this game is basically having you pretend to be another person while having sex with these people who think they know you, that you're actually pretending to be someone else, already violating extreme amounts of consent. And basically the entire game is about how cool it is to be a social manipulator and how cool it is to trick people into having sex with you while violating basic consensual boundaries. But also, again, it's a porn game. You're supposed to be getting off to this, like not in a problematic way, actually getting off to it.
Yeah, well, what I find interesting about this game is that, yeah, you're violating consent in a lot of different ways. Basically, all the sex is transactional in some way. And yes. Also, you are deceiving all the other characters by making them think that they're having sex with someone else. Lady Killer in Mind is also trying to be a healthy depiction of sex in a lot of different ways. Like, the two main options for romance, you have to go through either one of them. You are either in a submissive position or a dominant position with one of the other characters, and these are not non-transactional. The transactional aspects are less emphasized, and the sort of deception parts are less focused on, and characters are also within these scenes, they are talking with each other, they're using safe words, they're checking to make sure that the other person is doing okay, they're consenting to every individual act. So in some ways it is portraying a healthy sexual dynamic that is fully consensual.
And then you think about it a little bit more and you're like, these characters, when you choose them, they have the largest effect on your transactional responses. One of them removes all the suspicion, which if you get high enough suspicion, the game ends. To be clear, the suspicion choice is like how out of character you are from the brother you're playing. And if people suspect that you're not the brother enough, you get tied up and thrown in the prison cell and the game ends, basically. So that's a very important thing to avoid. In a way, if you're picking the riskiest dialogue options, you kind of have to visit that person for transactional reasons. And on the other hand, you have this girl who just keeps agreeing to give you votes if you keep visiting her. You think about how these characters are definitely more emotionally invested in you, and that makes the deception even worse because you're now pretending to be somebody that these characters are falling in love with. At least one of the characters is projecting her love onto this image of you who you aren't even. You're his twin sister. That just fucks everything up, in my opinion. Again, it's about how much you ignore it and how much you don't. Even in this game, you can't get away scot-free. Even in this game that she explicitly made as a porn game, and once described in an interview as wanting to make a feel-good game to get away from the feel-bad parts of Analog: A Hate Story, which I find very interesting.
Another layer to the transactional nature of a lot of these things is that everyone is always talking about these votes, who you're going to give your vote to and what you're going to get for it. Almost every major dialogue option has to do with negotiating these votes.
Every dialogue option has the literal transactional merits listed below each of them. So if you just want to pay attention to the transactional elements, you don't even technically have to read the text.
Right. And the prize within the game is that these votes are going to give you $5 million, which for some characters, that matters a lot. For other characters, it doesn't really matter. But within the broader context of the game, like the actual video game, Lady Killer in a Bind, getting the votes doesn't really matter. It's not important at all. It's barely plot relevant. It's basically just a setup to engage with the act of having to negotiate a vote, which I can see as like another kind of dating sim satire where the systems and the journey matter, but the actual thing you get at the end just doesn't matter at all. I might be reading too much into that.
Also, even thinking about the idea that Christine Love was like, yeah, I want to make the platonic ideal of a porn that like I'm going to be into and other people are going to be into. And then she had to include this part where you're coercing people into having sex with you for transactional points. The fact that she considers that seemingly as an integral part to the porn visual novel she's making says a whole lot of other things, I think. I don't know. It's complicated. And another thing is like the characters being into this transactional game so much simultaneously also makes it better and worse because you can tell yourself, hey, there are sociopaths who are also socially manipulating each other, so it's okay if I coerce them into doing it. But also it taps you into the idea that this is like a fucked up world where nothing comes free and there's no real kind of love for these people.
I want to say that this is also kind of taking this work more seriously than we would with most other porn or erotica, because if we take the modern popular erotic novel, not even modern, just any erotic novel, there's probably going to be a lot more problematic stuff, a lot of stuff that is much more non-consensual, and a part of the enjoyment of that erotica is that a lot of it is non-consensual, and it's kind of something that you either accept or you don't. Dead dove do not eat, and what they say. But I think that what makes Lady Killer in a Bind kind of difficult to read in this way is that it is trying to be kind of welcoming. It's sort of in that in-between space that 50 Shades of Grey is, where it's like you're not doing this just to get your rocks off. You're trying to make a work for everyone to enjoy, but at the same time trying to combine those two aspects of a work, being both populist and niche sexuality kind of things, is that that can come into conflict if your audience is not prepared for that.
And here you run into another problem of the auteur theory, which is that it kind of makes you read one reading onto all of her games. But to be clear, I played Lady Killer in a Bind after a lot of her other games and kind of getting the gist of what she was doing. So here comes a writer who is like, I'm going to post-ironically criticize a bunch of patriarchal institutions and anime tropes by kind of depicting it as okay, but deep down, I don't think it's okay. I'm leaving it up to you to make up your own mind about it. Anyways, here is a game I made that's just porn, and you don't need to think about it. Don't think about any of the implications. It's just porn. Don't worry about the characters. They're fine. Everything's cool. All right, just enjoy, beat off to it, you know. It's just like, what am I supposed to think? I'm not asking for her to tell me what I'm supposed to think, but it's like, I can't not turn that part of my brain off. In some ways, this is like the ultimate conclusion that I think Christine Love wants me to reach, in that if you're a minority who's getting into like anime, or like even just like a woman getting into anime, and you constantly see these sexist tropes in front of you, part of you is like, turn your brain off and enjoy. It's not really about you. And another part of you is like, I can't turn that part of my brain off. I can't not see it. But yeah, let's talk about the transcendental aspect of it, which is, like you mentioned before, with the very end. For me, it happened at the end of my first playthrough. The entire game, the game has this counter for these votes for this game you're playing. And it's like kind of encouraging you. It is encouraging you to play the game in order to get the most votes. But by the end of it, like Offer said before, the votes really don't matter because it's not really related to what your character wants. As a matter of fact, your character says at the very beginning of the game, she doesn't care about the game. Only you care about the game. It's literally called the game, and you're playing the game, and you're like, oh, this is the gamification aspect of it. What happened to me was I played through the second playthrough, and I didn't think about the votes at all. I think that leads into what I think the game's true statement is, because it mentions it over and over and over again. Again, Christine Love is not a subtle writer. Yeah, the world is transactionary in this game. But also, love can find a way to bloom somehow, because the transactionary parts of the game are only what you make of it. You don't have to play the voting game if you don't want to. None of that matters in the context of this game. I'm not saying you should deceive people to have sex with you in real life. That's not what I'm saying. But the point is, in this game, because of the kind of weird, porny aspect of it, where all the moral boundaries are like muddled, by the end of the game, when one character finds out that you've been lying to her about your identity the entire time, she's like, that's cool. Can we keep having sex? Like, that's where it ends at, basically. The game is basically this entire battle between the transactionary parts of real life versus escapism. You can say escapism, just by definition of its name, is running away from those problems. But love somehow thinks that engaging in escapism also helps you find a new version of genuine emotional vulnerability that transcends above the transactional aspects of it. Do I believe that? I don't know. Did it really make me feel like a brick had been thrown at my head at 100 miles per hour while I was playing this entire game? Yeah, it did.
On the other hand, I was just playing it like it was porn. I didn't really think too deeply about it, to be honest.
It upsets me. That really upsets me. You're the guy who's like analyzing all this shit, and you're like, yeah, these games are really deep if you think about it. And then you're like playing this game, and you're like, yeah, it's just a porn game. Who cares? She just wanted to make you... She just wanted to make kinky sex for everyone to get off to. It wasn't like she was making this big jumbled mess where artifice crosses over with power fantasies, crosses over with visual novels, crosses over with kinky sex and BDSM etiquette and social manipulation. And oh my god, there's just too much. There's too much. I really cannot stop thinking about it, because it's the game that gives you the least amount of answers and also the most amount of questions. To me, it's her like charging full speed with her post-ironic tone.
This game reminds me of Fun Bag Fantasy's side boob story too.
No, I do think there's a lot of interesting stuff, and you have made me think about it on a deeper level, but I wasn't really trying to delve into it too deeply, because I find erotica really difficult to parse a lot of the time, because sometimes they are trying to do something serious, but on the other hand, it's still erotica, and I'm like, okay, that's sex. Same way I don't really think too much about fight scenes in an action movie, where during an action movie I think about the overarching plot, and then the action scenes are just like, oh, yep, those are action scenes, don't think too much about this much. Yeah, you have made me think about the porn scenes on a more interesting level, and I really appreciate that, so thank you for that.
I guess just what just really fucks me up about this game is the way it's presented to you. Like, the way Christine Love advertises it is like, I'm tired of making these serious games about serious things. I want to make something that's just like what I want. Porn, pure porn for people and people like me, what the people really want. And then she makes this game that's all about transactions and technology, and how these invisible chains are hanging over us. Anyways, if you don't want to talk about erotica in a serious way, let's move on to the most important topic, which is the controversy surrounding one erotic scene in Lady Killer in a Bind. Let's talk about this unseriously. I don't know. I want to talk about it, but I also don't know if this ties into a bigger point about anything. It's just that when people talk about Christine Love, this is just one of the biggest things they talk about, I think, besides her games. To be clear, she had run into bits of controversy before. She had been accused of pedophilia by 4chan boards. Very ironic for writing, don't take it personally.
Don't take it personally, babe. It just ain't your story.
Yeah, she even came out in a Tumblr post and was like, guys, you're accusing me of this. I obviously meant for it to be bad. Which, that word, obviously, I think points to a disconnect between how she perceives her games and how people might perceive her games. And it shakes, like, the kind of whole thesis I have about post-irony from the very foundations, at the very beginning. There was another controversy about Lady Killer in a Bind getting a lot of popularity because she was previously dating one of the journalists. But also, like, I'm coming into the gaming industry where the biggest controversy right now is, like, Blizzard is overworking and sexually harassing its employees, and also they own a diamond mine. So, like, this is, like, peanuts compared to that.
It's also very similar to what Gamergate was about, which was very much not that. So a lot of the controversy is kind of disingenuous and hard to take seriously because of the context it was produced in.
Yeah, that sent me into a tizzy, and this sent me into even more of a tizzy, because at the end of Lady Killer in a Bind, there's 7 days in the game, and on the seventh day, there is this big problem where one of your girlfriends is kidnapped, and you have to convince somebody to turn around the ship to try and get her, and you have two options. And the two options are both, initially, on the first build, as far as I understand, unskippable rape scenes. You can argue every scene in Lady Killer in a Bind, consent is kind of thrown out the window from the beginning. But there is a scene where you choose one person to help turn the boat around for you. And it's the president, who's this mostly kind of like straight guy who's declared himself very uninterested in sex. And he's like, all of you horny idiots are losers. I'm better than all of you. He is like, I don't want to turn around the fucking boat for you. You're an idiot who's obsessed with sex. And I'll prove it to you by raping you. And I don't even want the sex. I just want to sexually humiliate you. The implication is that it's like all your character can communicate through is just sex. Because all the mechanics about the game so far have just been sex. So it's like kind of critiquing the game. But also simultaneously, it's pointing out this prude hypocrisy. But also simultaneously, the scene is a harrowing depiction of sexual assault. But also simultaneously, it's played for laughs. I'm not going to argue this. This is comedic. It is comedic. Okay. I am genuinely thinking this. You get to choose between two rape scenes. Another one is involving a completely separate character, and they're unskippable and untagged in the initial release, which really fucked a lot of people up. Because again, this is pornography. This is meant to be a kind of consent thing where you read about beforehand. That's why so much porn is tagged beforehand, so you know what's in it before you go into it. But she didn't tag the sexual assault scene, so there were probably a lot of people who were queer, like her, and wanted to have this cool lesbian sex for minority group's visual novel for porn, and they clicked into it and they got hit with an unskippable sexual assault scene. And top it all off, parts way throughout the sex scene, the woman, main character, who identifies as a lesbian and still identifies as a lesbian throughout the entire thing, is like, I kind of like this. I kind of like being raped by this person. I'm not going to look into it too much, and it's still kind of gross, but I kind of like it. And just several things, I guess. The main thing for me, I think, because here's my stance on it, like long after. I didn't play this game when it came out. It came out like, what, 2016? I'm playing this in 2025, long after the controversy now. Christine Levis patched the game to include a skip button and also content warnings telling you beforehand what those scenes have. So from my perspective, it's completely okay now, honestly. She tagged it and you can skip it if you want. But also just the fact that this happened in the first place, the fact that she released this first version without considering to think about tagging it and like what she was doing, it just like, I hate to say that this controversy fundamentally changed my opinion of how she writes her games or what she's doing, but it's like, did she even think it was transgressive? What did she want her audience to think? Did she want her audience to think it was hot? I'm like, that's like insane to me, but that's like not an unpossibility. You can tell I'm getting really flustered here. Super fucked up parts is that you can play that rape scene and you can choose to run away from that rape scene like before it starts. And then you get one of the few game overs you get in the game without accruing like an amount of suspicion points. The game is straight up just like, you lose because you didn't convince the guy to turn the boat around. And that means the story can't progress. So it's kind of encouraging you to say, okay, I have to do this rape scene against the player's consent. Was she trampling on the rules of consent intentionally? Was she just very careless?
My reading is a kind of carelessness and poor writing. Christine Love's work has a lot of moments in her writing that I think are executed very poorly. The end of Don't Take It Personally, Babe, I think is another big fumble. And this is another big example of that. She has said in interviews that her intention was not to make people uncomfortable, but was to contrast these scenes with these two characters, one of which you're taking a less powerful role and another role where she is taking the traditional position position of a dom, but is also in a not super consensual space, in a space where she doesn't want to be having sex. I think that that role feels a lot more transgressive, where it's like, oh wow, this is a rape scene where you are dominant and the rapist is submissive, which is not a way that a lot of people really think about sex very often. But anyway, her intention was to contrast these two scenes with the two main routes, where you are having more, from her perspective, informed consent, and contrasting the good BDSM sex with the bad BDSM sex. And that is a reading I can understand, but if that is the intended use, then I think that the game very much fumbles that, and in a way that is deeply harmful for a lot of different people within its original release. I still have problems with the later release, but yeah, it's a lot. And honestly, I think that in a context where this is properly warned about, and it was made in a place where people are not playing this game in order to understand sex, if this was literally made as a porn game and there were more content warnings so people know what they were getting into, I think I'd be a lot more permissive of this. But in a context where a lot of people who aren't expecting what they're getting into, it is a bad thing to do. I don't think she had ill intent, but it is, intent is not the main way that we measure harm done to other people, so not excusable.
Yeah, and that's part of why I refuse to read Lady Killer as just straightforward porn. Just the fact that it has this scene makes me look at all the other scenes in a very different way. Anyways, everyone made a big fuss about it. It still did win the Best Narrative Award at IGF that year, which I think is cool. It definitely deserves it, because again, I think it's a good written story. And honestly, I wouldn't have taken out the rape scene. I just would have wanted it to be tagged, like fully. If it had been fully tagged and warned about in the Steam pages, in the advertising, whatever, I wouldn't even include this topic in the podcast. But yeah, the problem with post-irony is that you can genuinely just be like a shithead and get away with it, because some people are willing to read into that, like me, as part of your whole master plan. Anyways, people got very mad at her. She worked for like 5 years on another game, and she came out with what I think is a response to that controversy, which is her latest game, Get in the Car Loser. Do you want to explain what Get in the Car Loser is?
So Get in the Car Loser is a JRPG where you have a pretty basic setup involving your ragtag group of queer lesbians who are fighting against the fascist machine cult. The bad guys are all pretty straightforwardly evil, and the good guys are pretty straightforwardly good, which is pretty typical within the JRPG genre. And you're just supposed to like mow down a bunch of these guys and keep killing them and upgrading your weapons and going through the game until you beat the final boss of fascism, and then everything is basically better. This is a non-visual novel, which means that you have a lot of combat, and the combat in this game, I don't think it needs to be described too much. It's kind of like Final Fantasy 13. It's not very good for most of it. For the first, I would say, 3/4 of the game, there isn't really a lot interesting you can do with this combat. It's very basic, like, oh, do damage with this, or oh, hey, you get a little bit of a shield. A lot of people say JRPGs are grindy. That usually isn't true. Usually you're supposed to be strategizing in order to beat more difficult bosses that are a higher level than you. But in this game, you are required to grind. You have to get enough money to upgrade all your items to get to the next part. And it is a bit of a slog. And I kind of hated the gameplay for 90% of it, and the 10% did not make up for the other 90% of the gameplay. Man, did not enjoy playing this.
Yeah, and if you thought that whatever the hell I just talked about for Lady Killer was a lot, let's talk about this game, because I feel like the only way I can read this game, again, it's that thing, I can't turn it off. I can't turn off that part of my brain that has an auteurist reading. This is why we started the podcast, because I keep reading everything with auteurist lens, and I think you do too, Offer.
That's like, what happens when you have an auteur. It's like once that gets in your mind, if you're like, oh, hey, this was made by one person and we can collect all these texts into one place, you can't stop reading them outside of that context. It's just stuck with you.
Yeah, because I keep seeing this game and it's like, oh, it's kind of with the more modern trend of like queer cozy game, like Butterfly Soup. Or the super lesbian animal RPG is another one of those, where it's like, feel good, you know? There are enemies, there are antagonists, but it's mostly about queer people hanging out, having a good time. But I look at it like, did Christine Love only make this game as a response to her controversy? Because it looks to me like she just saw her label, messy queer artist, and she just got a pair of scissors and tried as hard as possible to cut out that messy part. I feel like this is like the most inoffensive McDonald's hamburger version of a queer aesthetic game that Christine Love would still want to put out I don't think she did this like disingenuously or like for money. And she does, to be clear, say this a lot in interviews for the game, that she wanted to do a completely different change for her aesthetic. She didn't want to just make visual novels. She wants to make RPGs also. She wants to take a different direction for writing style. I guess my problem is I just think it sucks. It sucks so bad. I don't care. I don't care about any of the characters. I don't care about the setting. I don't care about the gameplay. I hate the grinding. I thought I was playing like the first 5 minutes and somehow I had gotten into a bug where the game avoids progressing. But no, that's just the video game. This might have had, ironically, the biggest emotional tax on me. It's not like I don't want this game to exist. It's cool that this game exists. It has a really cool aesthetic and music and stuff like that. And it has resonated a lot with queer people. But like, I am just saying this as a guy. I don't even want a transgressive artist's works to all be transgressive. That's not what I'm asking. People can do whatever they want. But it's just like, this is just so much less interesting. And I can't help but feel like this isn't what she really wants to do. Even though I'm not her. So here comes the problem with auteurism again. It's like I'm reading what she wants onto her, despite the fact that I've never met her in my entire life. I shouldn't take it personally, babe, because it literally is not my story. Yeah. I don't know.
I actually find the plot of this game to be more interesting, especially in comparison to her other works. The first two acts and the last act, it is very straightforward, very cozy, very friendly. But the third act is really interesting. So the protagonist of the game is a trans woman, whereas two of the characters are femme lesbians or pan, or they're women at the very least. And then there's also a non-binary character who is, I think, is self-described as a butch lesbian within the game, but also uses they them pronouns and also describes himself as another character's boyfriend,
which is a huge problem. Obviously people should not be allowed to identify themselves if it conflicts with any rule that I have. Okay, we gotta talk about this for the next 10 hours. They call this discourse.
Yeah, discourse. There we go. So in the third act, basically the entire visual style of the game changes. Before, you used to be able to choose a bunch of different emotions and different responses to different lines. Instead, you can only respond to the Sam-like option, which is like the most boring, like meek response you can give. And also all the other characters are like faded out and you only see your character in the back of the car by herself, and her face gets all fragmented with sprites of the other characters like breaking up her face. The entire tone of the game changes. Instead of the cozy queer RPG road trip you're on, it instead turns into a trans woman like being really insecure about her gender identity and being like, you know, I really don't like telling other people what my pronouns are. I don't want to be asked what my pronouns are. People should obviously know that I'm a woman and I shouldn't have to deal with people asking me. And at the same time, she's like, well, that's how I feel, but I know that I have my queer non-binary friend right next to me and I know they wouldn't be okay with that. So that is something that I obviously have to deal with, but it still makes me feel bad, right? And then she basically keeps talking about other problematic feelings that she's been having, and she ultimately comes out the other end being like, these are my friends and I need to be supporting them and they'll be supporting me through my difficult emotional difficulties. That doesn't mean I should be rejecting the more traditional queer aspects that are less problematic, but it means I do need to be examining the problematic parts of myself and thinking about how I can be dealing with these feelings without hurting my other friends. And I think that's a really fascinating direction to go in. And then the fourth part is a boring JRPG boss where you fight God and you kill the bad guys.
Awesome. You know, I was with you for a moment there, but then when I turned around to like, I am going to question how problematic I am and stuff like that, I'm like, oh no, this is definitely a response to the controversy. No, this is even more of a response to the controversy than I thought.
Yeah, it's very hard not to read into that, given everything else. Yep. Maybe there's a correlation there, and maybe there's causation there. Who knows?
Yeah. I mean, to be clear, I'm only saying this as a person who's a fan of specific parts of her work. I don't like Digital Love Story as much as Don't Take It Personally, Babe, because Don't Take It Personally, Babe has that aesthetic thing that I really like. I like that one part of Christine Love. And obviously, she can do whatever she wants. She can move on from that writing style if she wants. It's just, I would feel very disappointed if I saw it go. Especially because Lady Killer in a Bind was the peak of that style. The most confrontational. The most acidic. And it got so acidic that she got basically half canceled for it. And then she was like, I'm never... Well, I don't know if never is the right word. But she's like, I'm not going to do this again. Let me put it this way. There's a teaser for a sequel to Lady Killer in a Bind at the end of Lady Killer in a Bind. And I highly doubt that's ever going to happen now that the Gamergate controversy has come and went. So, I don't know. It's just a shame. I'm saying this as someone who's personally disappointed in there not being any more games, but that's a selfish want, obviously.
Yeah. I also hope that she goes more into her messy queer writing, because on a personal level, I very much enjoy that stuff. I hope that she does it in a more considerate way towards other people in the future.
I hope she doesn't.
But okay. More rape scenes, Christine Love. Do more.
You need to become the Lars von Trier of video gaming, okay? Every movie you make should make people fucking want to murder you.
Exactly. Anyway, it is very difficult to recommend most of her work. I will recommend Digital, A Love Story, Analog, A Hate Story, and Hate Plus, because those are a lot easier to process. There are difficult aspects to Analog, A Hate Story, and Hate Plus that are criticized, I think, very well. But if that's too much for you, maybe some content warnings might be worth checking out. But otherwise, I can pretty safely recommend those three.
And me personally, I would recommend... See, the thing is, everyone's coming in from this from different angles. But if you're interested in what I was talking about, I would definitely start with Don't Take It Personally or Lady Killer in a Bind. Those two are my personal favorite, especially Lady Killer, which I think is best far above the rest. But if you want something lighter, yeah, I would also say Analog and Digital. Digital is the least problematic. Analog is like that perfect balance, teetering on the edge of post-ironic, and you can still treat it as genuine. Don't Take It Personally is, okay, now we're really wading in the waters. And then Lady Killer, that's full force. I mean, honestly, I rated it 5 stars. It's like an incredible visual novel. Also, we didn't mention this before, but there are other games from her that also kind of teeter on this post-ironic edge that I really like, especially Only Cowgirls Bleed, I think. It's a 5-minute Twine game. If you have issues with time investment and you want to know what I think is interesting about Christine Love's tone, the way she balances kind of jokey comedic writing with serious writing, not being able to tell when you're supposed to laugh or feel serious about things, play that game. It's 5 minutes long. I'm not going to spoil it.
Yeah, I actually second that one. Even Cowgirls Bleed is really interesting and fast and really gets at everything you really need to look at in Christine Love's work.
I also want to mention Anti-Recommendation for her novellas, which I started reading before I started playing her games for this episode. She wrote a bunch of early novellas around the time she was making her first games. These are just like published for free, and she was like 17 to 21 when she wrote them. Even after saying everything wonderful about her writing, I think her prose is really bad. I don't know what she's doing with her prose. And just want to mention this because you can't have enough controversy. She wrote a collection of short stories called Short Shorts, which are just like one-page short stories. And one of them is a story called All Quiet on the West Bank Front, which is a parody of the Israel-Palestine conflict. But instead of Israel-Palestine, it's butch versus femme lesbians. The last line of the story is her self-insert character saying the R-slur. So yeah, don't read them. Don't read them.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm going to give an anti-recommendation to anything before a Digital Love Story. I know a lot of my college writing wasn't very good, so I can't hate on it too much. But I want to say that anything before Digital Love Story, I recommend you don't check that out.
Another recommendation that completely swirled me. Again, here comes the post-ironic auteurist thing getting in my way. Love and Order, which is this game that she wrote scenario for, made by somebody else. I'm sorry, I forgot his name. It's a dating sim where you play as a law secretary working in a law firm, and you're doing all this work for 4 of your law firm higher-ups. But also, if you prioritize another task for them above other people, you can start dating them. I played this, and the work parts were so unbalanced that I could never even get to the dating sim parts because I was just too busy working, drinking to keep my level of stress down, and staying up at work late. At some point, I was like, is this the game? It's like a reverse critique of how work imposes on all the fun things you really want to do. Like, the shadow of the game is hiding behind its advertising, but you can never quite get there because the work part is just such an intrusive part of your life that you can't ever get to the later parts of the game. Or this is just a very poorly balanced game. So, well, interesting recommendation for that.
Love and Order was a Winter Wolves developed game. I played a few Winter Wolves games, and I'm going to do an anti-recommendation for all Winter Wolves games based on my experience.
Winter Wolves episode.
Some of the worst visual novels I have ever played. Do not really? Like Winter Wolves. They're catching strays in this episode because they're not even the subject here, but I'm doing an anti-recommendation anyway. Do not like.
This episode is really toxic. Yeah, I guess those are all my recommendations. Honestly, if you're interested in her work, like I am, you should just play all of her games because they're interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Say if they're good or bad, they're all interesting. And yes. Interesting is a neutral descriptor.
I mean, that's the thing about altruism, right? You're willing to wade into stuff that you might not have waded into otherwise for the sake of understanding a person who you are parasocially obsessed with. That's it. That's altruism, baby.
All right. So pretty clearly, Christine Love was one of my picks and not yours. So you get to choose the next person that we're going to be covering. What is going on there?
This one's a bit of a lighthearted one because I realized halfway through playing Love's games that I would need a more lighthearted one. This person is a very strange case for me because I think of them as an auteur in that I recognize their games as specifically attributed to their name, but also I can't really deduce their autorial style. I'm not willing to call this person a journeyman because they're an indie developer, so they're obviously not making it for money. So they're not like the Ron Howard of gaming, but also I'm like, what is this guy and what is he doing? You know? I'm talking about 2010's indie darling Terry Cavanaugh, who developed VVVVVV, Super Hexagon, and Dicey Dungeons. And most recently, he came out with a collection of his games that he made in between his other commercial releases called Terry's Other Games about like a few months ago.
Interesting. I have played VVV and Super Hexagon, but I have never thought about the person behind them. So that'll be interesting for me to check out.
I don't know why. I think it's because I got interested in investigating like early indie game developers, maybe, and I saw Ed McMillan and Jonathan Blow's names. But every time I see Super Hexagon, I'm like, yes, that is a Terry Cavanaugh game. Like, I can't separate it from his name. And I'm interested in seeing why, because I feel like he doesn't have like a very straightforward aesthetic you can apply to all his. He's made very short games, except for the one roguelike he makes that How Long the Beat Says takes like 70 hours to beat. I'm just not going to beat that one, I think. But yeah, he's made VVVVVV, Super Hexagon, Dicey Dungeons, and a bunch of early freeware games like Naya's Quest, Don't Look Back, Mr. Platformer, that's a later one actually. And he's just been kind of like, I wouldn't say quietly, because he was like a big deal, but like, he just kind of seems to have not been as big of a name now. And I want to look into that and figure out why.
That's it appears all his major games are on the Ouya, so...
That explains why his career failed. Okay.
But yeah,
I'm just... His career did not fail, okay? To be clear, he's making money. It's fine. He's fine.
Really, basically everyone in the early 2010s indie scene, almost all of them are like losing popularity because of how competitive the scene has gotten.
Yeah.
Which is kind of sad.
It's only that way until like Bennett Foddy makes his Balatro, because you know he's going to do it.
I mean, Baby Steps might be. I've seen it get a lot of coverage, so we'll see.
Does it have gambling mechanics in it? Oh my god. I want to see a Christine Love game that taps into like the gambling gacha mechanics. Imagine an Uma Musume parody by Christine Love. That would go crazy, honestly. Wait, hang on. Christine Love, are you listening to this? Can we get you on this?
Don't pitch games to people.
No, if you're listening, I'll give it to you for free. Just put my name on the game somewhere, okay?
Don't you dare. All right. Well, there we go. Just ending it with a pitch. Is that how we end the episode?
I don't know. This whole episode's been a mess. As always, I'm Galvin.
I'm off the function.
Thanks for listening.
There we go.
Oh my god. I feel like I overheated, but maybe that makes for better podcasting. I don't know.
I think it's good. I think that you got your feelings out and it was legitimate and it was worth going over. So yeah, I'm glad you did it.
I don't think I had catharsis. I'm still going to be thinking about it. It's like Christine Love's games. She refuses to give you catharsis. I'm wandering in Elysium forever. I'm fucked, basically.
Exactly. Lucky you.